Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as always, the quiet cheese to my louder milk, it's Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
Yes, good morning, Dan. And this is one of the few times where, when we're saying good morning, it's not because it's just minutes after midnight. It's like sun is up. It's morning for us. It's crazy. So we are back once again for the latest episode of Legion on FX. We'll be cracking open that one with a little recapping and our initial observations shortly. But first, we want to lead off the podcast with more thoughts on last week's episode. Now, once again, these are just thoughts that bubbled up after our last podcast, and, you know, one additional viewing of the episode, of course. Now, these could be trivial, could be essential. Hopefully, either way, they'll be interesting. So, speaking of trivial, I'll lead off right off the bat with, you know, I didn't realize that that female voice that was singing the Talking Head song in the beginning, that was actually Sid. I didn't know what a lovely voice Rachel Keller actually had there. I didn't realize it until after watching it again. And speaking of that opening from the previous episode, I was trying to figure out, is David getting what's, you know, akin to having the DTs for maybe not having taken any more meds? And maybe that's what's leading to him not being able to suppress the voices in his head until Melanie kind of guides him to how to filter the rest out. And, you know, just how she kind of points out why this is telepathy. Is that how you interpreted that? That was kind of a reaction from not having been given his medications?
That's the impression that I got, but it could go either way depending on kind of what's going on exactly.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to say with that character because there's still, even after the latest episode, we're still running into the issue of maybe he isn't all quite there, so to speak, as he says himself tonight. So here's the thing, just maybe almost like a crackpot theory, just at least based on his memories or his tainted memories. The images we see of his father reading him that bizarre bedtime story, and the way it's shot just basically in silhouette and you never actually can see his father. I keep thinking that in his memories, he's seeing himself reading the story. That it's actually David reading the story to himself, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure like next week we'll see it some different actor entirely, but that's what it looks like to me. Back to just odd little things I noticed. David and his doctor, Dr. Poole, I noticed that when they're having their conversations, they're wearing conflicting stripes. So you notice that like David is in horizontal stripes and Poole is in vertical stripes. Of course, David being in horizontal stripes also has that kind of subliminal message of David is a prisoner. So I thought they were kind of playing with style there. I think everyone noticed that when David walks out of the doctor's office, he's eating a Twizzler. And once he starts chewing on that, you know, little red vine, Lenny appears. And she had those in the first episode when they're in the asylum. So I was kind of wondering if there was kind of an odd little connection there as well. Speaking of what they go off and do, they're doing some drug that they mention is blue. It's always blue. It's interesting that blue drugs seem to be fairly common because a lot of well-known drugs in pill form are blue, like oxycodone, diazepam, alprazolam, whatever. And of course, I think we can't help but think of Breaking Bad and like the crystal meth that they would make on that show is blue. So it's kind of funny that they say it's always blue. Now, I guess a couple of these points I wrote down before the latest episode, and I think they kind of they're either answered or they're more explored in the new episode, such as this one. I was trying to figure out if something or someone other than David is actually controlling the memories of his mind and perhaps keeping autonomy from, you know, probing any further. or is it literally David's own subconscious that's putting up firewalls? So that's something I was trying to figure out. I think we get a little bit more insight into it in the current episode. I mean, is that how you saw it? Is it more? Because he keeps talking like he's not aware that he's the one stopping them, but they seem to be insistent it is him, though.
Yeah, at least that's the way they see it. I mean, and coming from like an outside perspective, that does make sense. Well, they would see that way, you know, kind of like a psychological standpoint. But you know, in this world, it could be some kind of external force. So I think they touched on it this week, but I think they've still left it a little open.
Right. Yeah, we'll definitely be talking a bit about that later. I think a lot of that is at the core of, I think, David's own sanity, quite frankly. I like those little lines I really liked in the episode that kind of were intriguing. Like when the doctor says to him that he's seeing another world out of the corner of his eye, which is just it's an interesting way to phrase that, which started when he was 10 or 11 or something. I was also curious if certain memories triggered the voices. You know, for example, when he's remembering his father, all of a sudden we hear the voices start and then they ebb away. And they begin again when he sees that closet door open. Or is it just that they're just driven by anxiety? The more stressed he gets, the more he starts to hear the voices in his head. Are the voices always there to some extent? Silly thing. It had been bugging me through the first two episodes that it took this long for me to finally figure out who the actress was that's playing Amy. It didn't occur to me who it was. It's Jenny from The League. I didn't realize that was her. Because I'm not used to seeing her play, you know, a dramatic role. Also, that crunching and growling sound that we hear, that when David is in the MRI or the scanning machine, just before we see the devil with the yellow eyes appear, you hear the exact same noises coming from the closet before the doctor closes the door in David's memory. So that's kind of an interesting kind of a connection here. Again, implying that although we don't see it, that maybe at least David believes that that devil creature is also in that closet as well. The next one is definitely dealt with in the next episode. I noticed that those tapes that we see someone rifling through in the drawers are, I was wondering if those were the reel-to-reel tapes from David. Therapy session, which we now know they absolutely are, although I thought it was kind of a literal representation of someone trying to suppress or steal his memories. But I was wondering why Dr. Poole's face is so bloodied up in those flashes. And as we saw in the current episode, Poole isn't there, so that's kind of curious. And finally, my final thought was there's this really cute little surreal touch towards the end of the episode. If you look closely in the room where Amy is being kept for interrogation, there's a clock on the wall, but there's no hands on the clock. So it's they're making it clear there really is no sense of time on this show, I thought, with that. So I think for now we can close the book on chapter 2, which means, guess what, we can finally crack open Chapter 3 of Legion. Okay, so recap time. I suspect this will probably be a bit more than 5 minutes, but certainly less than 10. But hey, Dan, if something does occur to you while I'm yapping away here, feel free to break in. I figure this show is way unconventional, so we can certainly move off of our supposed quote-unquote format here whenever we want to as well. And it seems really appropriate to begin with, shall we begin? So, Chapter 3 does open with this nearly dizzying montage of past and present layers, which really tells us so much story with images, words, moods, and so on. You know, just like seeing both David and Sid shower separately, but presumably at the same time, implies an erotic intimacy that they're unable to literally share. Or David's visions of his sister being interrogated. I mean, if those images are his visions, I'm not really clear on that. And we also get some peeks at the other people at the Summerlin complex. Most importantly, we actually learn that apparently Carrie and Carrie Loudermilk can inhabit the same body. So that was kind of an interesting little fact they threw at us there. Now, the focus of the episode is to get David to focus on the big events in his life, those things that scared him the most. Melanie Bird wouldn't normally take such a shortcut, but they're trying to rush David's therapy along so that there's time to rescue his sister from the clutches of Division 3. So they zip to his infamous kitchen explosion memory. This is where Melanie says this is the first confirmation that she has that David is more than simply a telepath. That kind of made me wonder how she forgot about what happened to Loudermilk's MRI machine in the previous chapter, but I figured I would just let that go. We do learn that that kitchen scene was preceded directly by David's froggy drug trip with Lenny, who actually gets into a fight with David's girlfriend, Philly, while memory David remains obliviously high to the whole thing. But then right after that, present David sees the devil with the yellow eyes, you know, in his memory, but we see that neither Melanie nor Tanami can. Now, present David, he freaks out, and then they're zapped out of his memories. But not only that, they're transported out of the room where they do the memory work, which shows even more of David's array of powers. After that, we do get a lovely and genuinely funny scene between David and Sid discussing, well, what they may or may not have done when they found themselves in each other's bodies. Later, David goes for his next Loudermilk memory mapping session, although he can't promise not to break everything this time. The stressful memory he recounts is almost losing his dog on Halloween, and being frightened by this manifestation of the world's angriest boy in the world. We'll just call that creature the world's angriest boy for future reference.
Or the president.
Maybe I'll do that. In the lab, David does see Lenny appear. It seems like she's become less of a conscience than more a malevolent presence for him now, because she's telling him not to trust Melanie, and she mocks his fears about his sister. Then, as the show does, stuff starts to go crazy yet again. The room is cast in an eerie red glow, David levitates, as does Sid when she comes in to hopefully help calm him down, and then they're gone in this blinding bright light. And then they appear as almost unseen phantoms in the room where Amy is being interrogated. But that guy with the milky eye, the Eye, or as we later learn his name, Malcolm, seemingly can either see or at least sense their presence. And just like that, David zaps them out of there, and he and Sid end up in the lake outside the Summerlin campus. Now, after this, we do get to learn a little bit more about Melanie. We find out that her husband built the place, and in fact, the voice we hear in the elevators and in the coffee machine that tells stories, it's the voice of her presumably late husband. She does truly want to help David to be healthy again, but she also wants to use him in their war. There is another option that they can attempt as they try to sort out David's memories by sedating him just enough so that his brain's defenses are lowered. This time, Sid's going to join them in their latest fantastic voyage into David's far-from-spotless mind, even though David is initially worried it will change the way Sid sees him. This is also the moment I think we see that these two are really, truly in love with each other. So off into David's memories they go, and he is with them on their trip, but it's the child version of David that represents the awake part of his brain. We also learn that while in this dream dimension, and by the way, a lot of this does feel like a little bit of a nod to Inception, particularly when we see everyone is unconscious as if sharing a dream rather than entering a memory together. Anyways, I was trying to say that Sid here can actually touch people. She can touch and embrace David here. And even though it's the child version of him, you do know at some point in a future episode, this will be a way for them to finally touch each other again. Now back to the memory track, where they see David is breaking into his doctor's office. Hell, they can even see David's memories of his experiences there. Memories within memories. But, once again, stuff starts to go haywire, and as the room starts quaking, Sid is clearly the only one of the three adults there who can see that the walls are cracking apart and something wicked is coming their way. So she runs off with young David, and each adjoining room is another memory connected to the previous one. It had a very Charlie Kaufman Eternal Sunshine vibe to this whole sequence, I thought. They're first trying to escape via the air ducts from that world's angriest boy, or Trump, who then becomes the horrifying devil with the yellow eyes. At that point, Sid does awaken, but everyone else is asleep, and it's initially just a little complicated, more complicated than you'd think, at least, for a person who can't touch people to wake them up. Autonomy does wake up, but Melanie doesn't, and we do see here that she's still within the memory. She's walking up the stairs of David's childhood home, up to his bedroom, and she finds that creepiest all-get-out book, The World's Angriest Boy in the World. But as she reads it, and boy, it becomes more and more disturbing page after page, suddenly her hand is caught in it, like in the jaws of a beast of some kind. And I think unbeknownst to her, we see the devil with the yellow eyes is almost literally inflating right behind her, looming over her as if about to strike. And then she wakes up. But, as the episode ends, David is still asleep. So that's my recap of the episode. So before we get into any specific conversations, obviously the original pilot was a trip and a half for us, and the second episode, a bit of a come down, but an expected one, kind of just to give it for us to set our bearings for how the show is going to proceed. So now with this third entry, what did you think of this episode? What was your overall opinion on it compared to the previous two?
I was really struck how it was essentially, it didn't progress much from what they did in the second episode, but I found it to be really compelling, and it didn't feel like there was any kind of pacing issue where it was being repetitive. I'm just like, oh, this is really interesting. They're just taking their time, working their way through this, chipping away, and it's not I'm in no rush to get too much. I'm not in a big rush for the story to progress.
Right. I mean, it's still more about just dealing with David and his memories rather than a forward progression of, oh, they've got to get to Division 3 and they've got to save the sister and we got to get to this whole war thing. But it never feels like it's just running in place. It feels like we're getting a lot, even if story-wise, as you say, it hasn't really moved forward much from the second episode. I think in many ways I like this one a little bit better than the previous one, if that makes any
sense.
Yeah,
me too.
I mean, and not because of some of the crazy stuff that happened. I think if it makes any sense, I'm getting to know the characters more. So it's making me more interested in them or making me care about them more. I mean, especially Sid. I mean, Sid was, top notch in this episode. I can understand why David's falling in love with her. I'm falling in love with her. She's just a great character. The actress is really something special, and I think it's a great move for the show because in the midst of all this insanity, both literal and figurative, quite frankly, and all this craziness with visuals and storylines and past and present and how it can even be almost incoherent at times, if you've got that at the core of the show, this relationship between these two characters, that's really our anchor as well as David's anchor. I think it really holds it together for us, I think.
Yeah, I liked how it seemed like they gave Rachel Keller more to do this week, and she definitely, even though the show is definitely David-centric and everything is just kind of spinning around him, I mean, they had more emphasis on her viewpoint this week, and it was nice to see, it's good. It's just, I like when they have these actresses that we're not used to seeing, and they give them a shot and let them kind of do a little bit more, and it just kind of ends up being really rewarding. I mean, this is a lot faster. They gave her more to do here than we saw Ray Seahorn do probably in most of the first season of Better Call Saul. So
yeah,
it just
that's true. That's true.
And it paid off, and it is paying off.
Now, another thing, I know that we've talked in previous episodes about how Noah Hawley likes to mash up genres and styles of filmmaking. I mean, we certainly saw it in both seasons of Fargo, especially season 2. And we discussed that quite a bit regarding the premiere of Legion, because he directed that actual episode. Now, I know this is another episode directed by Michael Uppendahl, but man, I thought we went off into yet another genre, something fierce this week. because, you know, obviously at the root of the show, it's a, you know, you can say it's a quote unquote, it's a superhero show, but we've also been immersed in, you know, sci-fi and dabbled in, you know, the whole paranoid political thriller stylings of the 70s. But tonight, or today, or yesterday, whatever, the episode is the first time I thought they really truly dipped into horror. I will say that I was genuinely startled and even, like, really fearful a few times during that final sequence within David's memories.
Oh yeah, same here. I definitely realized that they were doing that more this week, and it was, you know, genuinely scary and really creepy. So I think that they're doing really well to kind of stretch the box that these kind of shows normally are in. I mean, they're just kind of, you know, ignoring that whatsoever and just telling whatever the story they need to tell.
Right. I mean, the moments that might have been kind of disorienting in the previous episodes tend to be like these quick little flashes. Like, there was a really quick flash of the manifestation of the world's angriest boy in a previous episode. But now, you know, they're actually being chased by it. Or even the devil with the yellow eye, same kind of thing. Quite often he would just be like, whoa, just there. Now he's more of a thing that's really approaching or coming towards him. So it just became that much more horrifying, I thought. So another thing about this episode overall, during that opening, we opened with Melanie and the coffee machine, which I mentioned. We later learned that the voice of the coffee machine is actually Melanie's husband, telling a story about a woodcutter and a crane that disguised itself as a woman. And once the crane was revealed, it flies away. Now, what's interesting first about this is just the use of stories like that in parables. First of all, since it's Noah Hawley, it's very reminiscent of season one of Fargo. Because if you, as you'll remember, there were stories that were not just told, but even episodes were named after them. You know, parables that paralleled the faults or foibles of characters in the series. I thought here, the idea of revealing the true nature of a person, which is what happens in that story, is really at the heart of this episode, because there's constant reveals about the true natures of people or things in this episode. Whether it's the casual reveal about Loudermilk's body, apparently body splitting ability, to what David is capable of, or the fact that he was really a junkie, as he has to feel he admits to Sid at some point. So I thought that was really it's a really great little storytelling device, both literally and figuratively in the episode. And it's also nice that she keeps pouring out the coffee and ordering another cup of coffee from the machine, and you realize it's because she's listening to her husband's voice again too. So it's kind
right.
Speaking of giving characters more to do or more to say, I thought they also gave Jean Smart a lot more to do this episode as well, beyond what she had done in the previous episode. And we already know she can really, if you give her a chance, she can really do something. I mean, she was wonderful season two of Fargo. This part is so far at least. As much to sink her teeth into, but I'm intrigued to see where it goes, because maybe there still is. That's why I think little moments like that thing with the coffee machine just gave us a little bit more about her that wasn't just pure exposition, so I always like when they can do stuff like that.
Yeah, I always enjoy when I see her, and I don't expect her to, you know, do anything quite like, you know, 24 season 5 craziness here, but...
Oh, she was so good in that, though. I love it. I think that's my favorite season.
Yeah.
Is that Evil President season?
Yeah.
Ah, that's my favorite season. Other than season one, maybe. This may or may not be a question. We'll say it's a question. Going back to his sister, Amy, who is, we see throughout the episode, is being interrogated or questioned by, the actor David Selby, who I always remember a billion years ago from Falcon Crest, actually learned his character is named Brubaker on the show, even though I don't know if anyone's called him by name so far. So when he's talking to her about David, about how, you know, about the actual powers he has and how he was treated like a fool and made to believe that he was sick and whatever. Do you get the impression that she was not simply in denial of David's true nature, but she knowingly colluded with her family and the authorities to convince him that he was simply sick and had to be committed? I was trying to figure out, because my impression when I watched it was she knew full well that he wasn't sick, but I'm thinking about it, like, well, that just might be the way I took it, but she might just think he's sick. Why would she think that he's got all these abilities? Because that may be outside of her possible frame of reference. So do you think she actually believes her brother to be mentally ill? Or do you think she's frightened of him that he has these abilities and she thought he should be put away to keep him from hurting anybody? Which do you think it is for her?
I think that it's probably the second of the two options. That, you know, she, you know, knows that there's something going on. I would even go so far as to say that maybe she has some kind of abilities of her own that we just haven't seen yet. I mean, we have to depend on what kind of, like, you know, who his parents are and if that's relevant or not. But I could see some kind of thing where, you know, like they could do that.
That's interesting. Of course, at a certain point, we may find out that they may not actually be blood relations to begin with, which I think is what we're suspecting. Going just by the, as you know, the comic book origins of who his father actually is, which we know they may never ever say on the series for any number of reasons, but they could get away with him just being adopted, and we just haven't heard yet. I mean, I think that's possible.
Right.
And also when he's saying this stuff to her, which is kind of making it clear or unclear what she knows or doesn't know as far as the. Is that at the same point where David is there as a phantom? Because I'm actually forgetting that. So I figured you watched it just a little while ago. Is that the part that he's actually witnessing?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't witness the entire scene, like, while him and Sid are in, like, spectral form, but it's definitely, like, you know, all part of the same, you know, interrogation where we're seeing that, so... I can't remember if it's...
Yeah,
that's one where...
I'm not sure. Since there wasn't really a reaction about it much afterwards, I'm guessing he didn't see that part, or he didn't catch on to that part, or he didn't interpret that part the way I did. I don't know. Okay, so at this point, I guess I'm more believing that David really did know Lenny, and it's just not something that's been messing up his memories, and she's popping up where she doesn't belong, which means I'm going to be proven that to be the case in another episode.
Yeah, it is. It is weird, though. I mean, like, you know, why would they be in the same facility? Maybe there was just like a drug rehab or something, or I don't know.
Right. It's a strange. It's a very strange coincidence to have happened. But you know, because there is that idea that, you know, her appearing elsewhere does seem to be less of a true memory than David's memory of her as kind of his own way of torturing himself, is like his guilt over her death or something. But it was something I was confused by just for the moment, and it may have been referencing a previous episode, and I'm just not remembering it correctly, because that can happen. The moment where Sid and then the young David are running from memory to memory, and they briefly are in that room where David is having sex. Is he having sex with his girlfriend Philly, or is he having sex with Lenny? I got the impression he might be having sex with Lenny there, and I couldn't remember if that was from a previous episode or not, and if they'd had a brief physical relationship or not. I'm not sure, and I couldn't make it out.
It's too dark, yeah.
Although considering everything that happens, it wouldn't shock me if he ended up having sex with Lenny. Who knows? So I was wondering, since it was Lenny's plan, I guess, If past David is in his doctor's office to steal stuff, the implication is that he was stealing stuff presumably for money, or maybe he would even be looking for a prescription pad, assuming this doctor can even write scripts. But why take those tapes? Is he just trying to erase his own presence there? And then they show that he's like eating the tapes, or is that just some wacky flash or a creepy desire, but not real? I was a little confused by that.
Yeah, I think there's probably some kind of there's an abstract meaning to that, but I haven't had enough time to think about it to figure out what it would mean.
You need more time to process that. But I mean,
Yeah.
you can't be eating audio tape. That's just weird. Okay, so this goes back to what I had mentioned in the when we were talking about the things from last week's episode. The devil with the yellow eyes. It does appear, as we watch this episode, that seems to be at the core of what's creating the problems, the glitches, the blocking, whatever, in David's memories. So I guess now it comes down to whether we believe that this is an actual entity of some kind, or is it just a part of David? You know, it's a part. It's that part of his brain that, and this is how it manifests in these memories as this evil thing. And I think it's an important question to consider, because if it's one, then David is sane and he is being tortured from some sort of outside influence. And if it's actually just part of David, then what he says, when he has that line at a certain point about, you know, everybody keeps saying that he's sane, what if he's not? That kind of goes right to that point. You know what? It's the unreliable narrator's, you know, situation once again. But maybe he really isn't all there. And it's funny because that oddly sounds like the exact opposite of what Sid was saying in the pilot. Remember when she's in the therapy session, she has that whole little thing about, you know, people with supposed mental issues. You know, maybe they're fine after all. It's like now you think maybe she's talking about David, so to speak.
And this could be something like, I don't know how to word this, unsurprisingly, but maybe kind of like, you know, it's like an external influence, but it's kind of manifesting like internally in its own way, but like it's still, you know, like let's say he absorbed like, you know, I don't know, like his father might be kind of a douchebag and, you know, read him creepy stories, whatever. Maybe at some point he like absorbed his father's personality and then views him as the yellow eye devil and kind of like, you know, so it's like his father's personality just kind of like, you know, bouncing around in there like Lenny presumably could be. It could be something like that too, where, you know, it's, you know, both.
That's interesting. It's funny because they haven't, other than, I guess maybe Lenny, they haven't really touched on the idea or concept of him absorbing personalities, which people familiar with the comic books know that's essentially what he does. And hence the whole Legion thing, referring to all the multiple personalities that are all confined within him. I wonder if that's something that they might touch on more as this show goes on, where it starts to become more clear. I think there are things in the abstract that hint at that. There's that shot they show a couple times. They showed it quickly in the previous episode, and they linger on it a bit more here, where he's like being yelled at all those people around him.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's like they're the voices in his head, but maybe that's also, these are all the different people or personalities he's absorbed over time, which has probably just made him more quote unquote insane. I keep saying quote unquote, apologize for that. bad habit. You know, it's early in the morning, whatever. But, I am curious to see if they realize that that's the case. It's like, Melanie and Tommy, whatever, they're discovering all these additional levels of David's abilities. It's not just that he's a telepath, it's that he can also transmute and he can transport and he is becoming more and more godlike, as the Brubaker from Division 3 says. I do agree that with you that if the devil with the yellow eyes or whatever is from an outside source, it could be something like something he had absorbed, like his father, who he clearly does view as an evil douchebag. Because just reading that story alone is kind of disturbing. although I did get curious towards the end when Melanie is walking up the stairs, and I'm assuming she's in David's home. She does see like two people there. And I think those are supposed to be David's mother and father. I mean, is that who they're... I think that's who they're supposed to be, right? Who else would they be?
Yeah.
So, Which was like an odd thing to put in there because, in one hand, it seems like a kind of a major reveal, and it's treated like they're basically just extras and she's walking by. So I didn't know what to make of that. I don't know if I have much else to say in my initial reaction to the episode. I mean, like I said, I thought it was, I mean, as much as I really loved episode two or chapter two, I thought this was just a crazy step up from that. And I really,
Right.
you know, it's really, for me, it was really the Sid stuff that really made it kind of hit me emotionally as well as just being dazzled by it, I think.
I think I'm on board with you there. I don't have too much more to say about the episode. There are certain things that I really like the special effect where David and Sid, start to melt away and before they end up in astral form or whatever they're doing. I thought that was really sweet, just kind of trippy.
The effects of the show, I mean, they use their budget wisely, and you've never, I don't think we've ever felt that though they're skimping out here and there. But between the effects and the set design is so gorgeous on this show. And can we see more X's in the windows, please? Yeah,
Yeah.
in case anyone doesn't know. It's like, oh, an X in the window, and it's yellow too. What does that remind me of? I thought that was kind of funny. And speaking of funny, I have to say, because I only touched on it, but I didn't say anything they said. Of all three episodes so far, this episode had the funniest scene when David and Sid are talking about their experiences in each other's bodies. That was like the cutest, funniest, sweetest scene we've had in this episode and in the show so far, and compared to most shows that we watch, especially when Sid kind of mimics jerking off to him. He goes, "No, I didn't. I thought about it." I just love the idea of just imagine that, you're with someone that you're falling in love with, but you can't touch them. But for like a few hours, you're suddenly within their body. Oh my gosh, of course you're gonna check out everything. I love them talking about it, like having to pee. I was like, wow, that's so brilliant. I never would have thought of them, them getting into that area, but yeah, I'm glad you did, so to speak. All right, okay, well, like I said, the show Legion, it's 3 for 3 for me as far as I'm concerned. I think that's the way it is for you as well, clearly.
They're definitely doing a solid job, and they don't seem to have any weak links in the cast, which is always nice. Makes these higher tier shows, which apparently this is or certainly will end up being, that much stronger than the average. Just seeing Canadian guest stars not do a great job, like we.
Like other shows that we talk about on a weekly basis, which will be later this evening, I believe. Before I wrap things up, one little note I thought we should mention here. Since we're talking about Legion and Noah Hawley, we did also find that within the last 24 hours, they announced when Fargo season 3 is coming back. Good Lord. Okay, so apparently it's coming back on April 19th. Which is great news in one respect because we're excited to see Fargo again, because it's, as it's my favorite show, whatever. Also, a little bit of a mini disaster for the two of us because we also found out not that long ago that Better Call Saul comes back on April 10th, and we've got our CW shows that we cover every week. So we're looking at a log jam coming, heading our way this April. So we're going to figure out how we're going to sort that out, because we'll figure something out. At least we've got some time.
Yeah, thank God Twin Peaks isn't back until late May, because if that was on April too, I'd just be like done for.
Oh, I mean, April, just April in terms of quality of TV
Oof,
shows is
yeah.
something because we've got those shows that we podcast about. Plus, The Leftovers comes back in April
Well,
as
yeah.
well.
Oh, yeah. I could see us talking about leftovers too. I mean, we're just not going to have enough time, but that'd be the kind of thing where we'd probably be, into talking about, but it's not going to, I don't think it's going to
Yeah,
happen.
we just, I just, real, without getting into anything more than real life is complicated as is. There's just no way I can, either of us, not just me, either of us can really start doing 3 or 4 nights a week podcasting. It's just, that's not going to happen. But we're going to try to figure something out. You know, we've got at least, the good thing is we've got a couple months lead time to figure it out and see if there's a way we can juggle all these shows that we want to be talking about. So we got time to figure it out. Worst comes to worst, mm-hmm. I don't know what we'll do. we'll do five-minute podcasts about all of them in one night. Yeah, right. That'll never happen. All right. So, hey, guys, if you enjoyed this podcast, you probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. You can find us there as the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can like the page and join the conversation about this and many other TV shows. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. If you type in the Serious TV Drama Podcast there, you can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us. And you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast, is STVD, as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. And hey, for those fans of ours who are regular listeners, if you do really like us, and you probably have rated and reviewed us, which is awesome, it's really cool that a few of you out there do occasionally retweet our podcast links, or sometimes even pop it on your Facebook pages and stuff. Anything that anyone can do to help spread the word, to, you know, so we can like build an audience, is always, always greatly appreciated. I can't say how much I appreciate when people do stuff like that. Okay, Dan, I'm glad you were able to make time in the, not really the wee hours of the morning, but it's the morning where, you know, you've got to get ready to get to work, and I've gotten ready to do some stuff myself, so probably why we were able to get this done in pretty good freaking time, so that looks always nice. But the one problem is I can't say goodnight. I guess I'll say good morning.
Okay. Yeah. Have a good afternoon, Scott.
Oh, of course. Good afternoon, Dan.